You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a new report finds a significant backlog of infrastructure projects throughout the metro Milwaukee area. We'll learn more about the state roads, highways, and more in Wisconsin in just a bit. First, the Associated Press published a photo last week of Oscar Alberto Martinez Ramirez and his two-year-old daughter, Angie Valeria. The picture showed that they had drowned trying to cross the border from Mexico in an attempt to claim asylum in the U.S. It sparked a big reaction, with Congress ultimately passing an emergency border funding package a day later. It's not the first picture to have an effect. Images like the photo of Emmett Till and those from the Vietnam War have all triggered big reactions during their time, but our next guest says many of those responses can be short-lived. Paul Slovic is a professor of psychology at the University of Oregon. He's the founder and president of Decision Research, an international research group that looks at how we make complex and risky decisions. Paul, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you, Rob.
We've been hearing about this crisis at the border for months. What is it about an image like this one that can really, I guess, cut through the words and impact the way we feel about something in the news?
Well, clearly this struck an emotional chord and virtually everyone who saw it. The question is, why this image? We've had other strong images of refugees and asylum seekers before this one, and we have had more since. So there was something special about this image, just as there was something special a couple of years ago when the Syrian refugees, Alon Kurdi and his family, when Alon was washed up on the shore of the beach in Turkey, and that sparked a similar reaction. So we know that pictures can be very powerful emotionally, and the real question is, why does it take a photo when we have the information, we have the data before the photo? We shouldn't have to wait for a photo to wake us up.
Yeah, we heard from Kelsey on Facebook who says she has a child who is that girl's age, and she broke down talking to her husband about the story. Does that answer your question in part, that image can personalize the story for us in a way that the data can't?
Absolutely. We know that our emotional brain reacts very strongly to images of individuals. One person kind of maximizes our emotional connection. And then rather strangely, as if there are multiple images or many people in a photo, we react less because we can't connect to an individual there. So we're wired to react strongly to individuals or a couple of people, you know, that are kind of a individual group. And I think in this case also it was important that the father and his daughter were dressed in a way, you know, kind of like we dress. We can identify with them, unfortunately, and that makes a big difference also in how we react.
I want to dig into something you mentioned there, that picture of one, or in this case, two people we feel that strong personal connection with. As we get more images or more data, more people, we might react less to the problem. Why?
I think it's because we're reacting with emotionally. So there's two ways we can process this information about something that's going on in the world that is, you know, a big problem. One is through kind of our gut feelings, our emotions, and that's how we usually react. The other is to kind of think logically and carefully, slowly about what's really going on here, what's the problem, and how serious is it. We tend not to do that because that's hard work. So when we think quickly, then the image affects us and it triggers feelings. And the thing that we've learned in research is that our feelings are innumerate. I mean, it's a strange term, but our feelings can't count. They can't multiply. They can't scale up very well. We feel so strongly when we see an individual in distress. Then we see many people. There's kind of nowhere for our feelings to go. They're already kind of maximized at one. And then also, we can't focus our attention on any one individual, and our attention, you know, wanes, it gets diverted, and then we lose it. and our feelings drop and we don't react. So we have a saying that, you know, the more who die, the less we care. And that's what happens when we rely only on our feelings and don't think carefully about the reality of what's really going on to cause this problem.
Talking to Paul Slovic, professor of psychology at the University of Oregon, about the power of images, tragic images like the one we're talking about from the U.S. border, others throughout history, how they can affect individuals, how they can affect decisions. Paul, is part of the story here, too, that, okay, one person we can perceive ourselves helping them with a donation or whatever. If it's dozens of people or hundreds or thousands, we feel powerless in the face of that?
Absolutely. That's a very important thing to help us understand why we react less when the problem is bigger. And again, it relates to relying on our feelings and our feelings being deceived by not being able to grasp certain elements of the situation. So, for example, we help others not only because they need our help, but we feel good about helping them. We refer to it as kind of the warm glow of compassion or that we get, you know, and that motivates us, the anticipation of feeling good. And supposing we learned that, oh, we can help this child, but unfortunately, there's another child over here you can't help. Well, the negative feeling that we have by seeing another child that we can't help comes in and it mixes with the good feeling we had about helping the child we can help and diminishes that good feeling. So it doesn't feel as good to help this child when you realize that there's someone else you can't help. And therefore, many people then would be less likely to help because it doesn't feel as good. Well, that's not rational. I mean, we shouldn't be deterred from helping someone just because we can't help everyone. And so we need to be aware of the fact that you don't have to do it all in order to make a significant difference. We have a saying that, you know, even partial solutions can save whole lives. Don't be demotivated because you can't fix the whole problem.
We heard from TV Tong on Facebook, who says these images are tragic and horrible, but nothing is ever done about them. When we talk about the image of the brutalized body of Emmett Till changing the discussion about civil rights, or the picture of Syrian kids injured or killed in a war changing policy, did they really, or did we just have this reaction and then they didn't really have that big an impact?
Sometimes they do make an impact. And what happens is that the photo can wake us up and get us caring, and that gives us a window of opportunity when we want to act. And if there's something that we see we can do, then we'll do it. If we don't feel there's anything we can do about it, then it makes sense to kind of turn it off, to turn our attention to something else, you know, problems, other problems in our lives that we need to attend to and maybe can do something about. So we studied the impact of the photo of Alan Kurdi, the boy on the beach, the Syrian refugee, and we looked for example at Google searches before for under the search term Syria and refugees before that photo. Now remember, the photo was in 2015, and the Syrian war started in 2011, and there were like 250,000 deaths, you know, of mostly civilians in Syria up to the point of that photograph. 250,000 deaths, and when we looked on Google searches, no one was interested in searching for anything about Syria or refugees. And then suddenly that picture came out, and the next day you see a huge spike in people searching under that term. And that spike kind of gradually diminished, and it took about a month to diminish. Well, that's a window of opportunity where people wanted to act. And one of my colleagues is in Sweden, and Sweden took in 150,000 Syrian refugees in 2015, an amazing number. And they set up a fund in the Swedish Red Cross to try to, you know, get money to care for these refugees. And before the photo came out, that fund was gathering about $8,000 a day. The day after that the picture came out, the donations went from 8,000 to 430,000. So we see a really powerful impact of that photo. And then, of course, it tailed off over the next month. So where the photo made people want to help And where there was something they could do, like donate to the Red Cross, they did it big time. But then after, then the question is, well, what do you do next to, you know, to deal with the Syrian problem? Most people didn't know what else to do. And over time, then that reaction stopped. And, you know, months or a year later, the situation for Syrians and Syrian refugees was no better than it was before. So the window of opportunity had closed, and things went back to where they were before.
We're talking to Paul Slovic from the University of Oregon about the impact that shocking, tragic images in the news can have on us. Paul, a few weeks back, I talked to Kim Phuc Phan Thai. She was the girl in the picture that was called Napalm Girl, the girl who had been burned by napalm in the course of the Vietnam War. Her life was transformed by the experience and the picture. She's now embraced a role as an ambassador of peace and trying to advocate for kids in war zones. Do you think there's a percentage of the population out there who, when they see something like this, doesn't have that only momentary reaction, but like Kim Phuc does, devotes their lives to an issue?
Absolutely. It can be clearly a life-changing experience, and you know, that's wonderful when it happens. And when it doesn't, you know, it doesn't have to change your life to motivate you to do something significant to help others. So, I mean, the photo, there's all, you know, extremes as to how powerful the impact can be. And obviously for Kim, it was a very, very powerful. But these images do make a difference. I mean, it's not surprising that with the crisis we have on our borders in Texas and Florida with these detention centers for children, that people are not, that the journalists are not allowed in there to take pictures of what's going on. I think the people who run those centers know what the effect would be if we had images coming out of those detention camps.
Do you have thoughts for journalists based on your research?
Well, I think journalists understand not only the power of a photograph, but also the power of a story. So just like photographs can wake us up, so can stories of individuals who are suffering abuse in various ways. So these narratives can cut through what we call the psychic numbing that occurs when you just hear the statistics of the story. The statistics numb us, but stories as well as photographs can penetrate that and connect us emotionally to the problem. Journalists know that. Nicholas Kristof, for example, typically tries to get us to care about some larger problem by giving us a story of an individual or a family that's being affected by that problem.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Paul is with us in Pullman. Paul, hello. Paul,
hello,
are you there?
Good afternoon.
Yep, go ahead.
I am here. Well, it's terrible what's happening on the on the southern border, and nobody wants to see anybody die. That's wrong. But I think the point to remember is, if you're going to take it from the news media, the story that goes with the picture, and how that picture is presented as to who caused it, why it's here. Certain liberal news organizations that blame it all on the government. And then you go to a different a conservative news outlet, and they frame the story a whole different way. So a guy's got to be really careful where you get your news, how you get your news. And, you know, something like 400 people died last year. I'm sure it's way up this year already.
Paul, thanks a lot for the call. Paul, making the case people are skeptical of what they see in the media, even an image. If you go in with concerns about the outlet that's presenting it to you, you may doubt whatever it is.
Sure, and people, the caller indicated that people might react differently to the image and interpret it different ways. I think the important thing is that the image can wake us up and get us to care about a problem when before we saw it, We weren't. We weren't paying any attention to it. So once you are paying attention, sure, try to get the facts, as best you can, in order to guide you as to whether or not you want to try to do something to help with the problem. So absolutely, get the facts, but the image can motivate you to do that.
Paul, thanks for the call. We're talking to Paul Slovic, psychology professor at the University of Oregon, about the impact of powerful images in the news, whether they can spur us to action. Back to your calls. Rick is on the line in Janesville. Rick, hello.
Hi, yes. I wanted to just mention the moral and the ethical responsibility of the person who is taking the image. I'm an educator, and I will show my students the image of the African child kind of hunched over. I think the photo's from the 70s, hunched over, on the savanna, and lurking behind it, there's a vulture or a buzzard. And, I ask my students, what's going on here or with the image? And not very many talk about the person who's taken the image who can provide help. And then we talk about the ethicals. Is it okay to take an image, or should we provide help?
Rick, thanks a lot for that call. Paul, I believe, and this is, don't quote me on this, I believe I read about that story and that the photographer did help that kid afterward, but can you talk about that ethical issue that Rick raises?
Right. Yeah, of course, one should provide help if you can. But I think the ethical issue is important. And the question is, are we, first, do all these images desensitize us? Well, yes, you can get desensitized to images just like to numbers. The other problem is that, is it ethically right to kind of violate this person's, humanity by showing an image of them, like we saw the father and daughter, and that's a tough question as well. I tend to feel that in these situations where people are being abused in such horrible ways that they're already being violated by what's happening to them, and if an image can mitigate this problem, can lead to a change so other people aren't harmed this way, then I think in a benefit cost sense, I would say that that one should show these images and because they can lead to change and help other people.
Thanks for that call, Rick. Time for one more caller. Mike is with us in Madison. Mike, hello.
Good afternoon. There's been a lot of photos coming up from our southern border, specifically one with the father and his daughter that did not make it across the border. It's tragic and it's sad. But at the same time, the Red Cross reports that approximately over 1 million women and children have been killed in the Middle East over the past 20 years due to U.S. aggression. Now, I'd like to hear your guest comment about the difference where these current pictures are coming out readily every day. But for the past 20 years, we have not seen pictures of all the women and children being killed in the Middle East, and how those two compare and discompare. I would be interested to hear you guys speak on that. Thank you.
Mike, thanks for the call. Paul, when bad things are happening and we don't have those pictures to motivate us.
Yes, we. The further away, this the problem is occurring, the less likely we are to see images. Sometimes it's difficult for journalists to get in and photograph what's going on in these hot spots like in Syria or Myanmar and other places. So that's another problem. I agree. These things tend to be underreported. Not only do we have fewer photographs, there's all kinds of genocides and mass atrocities occurring right now in the world, and we're getting relatively little information about it. I think sometimes the press feels that people aren't interested, and so they don't cover it. But in any event, it's not covered adequately, the things that are happening far away. The stuff on the border we see is it's politically hot, it's imminent, we feel it's going to affect us, so it's more likely to be covered. I think all of this should be covered adequately by the media.
In just our last few moments, Paul, do you have thoughts on how we can, if we want to not desensitize ourselves, how we can keep that empathy going?
Yes. First, we should be aware of the fact that this can be a problem for us, and we should, when you read a story about something happening that's big in scope, and you see the numbers, you know, you see thousands or hundreds of thousands of people being affected, stop and pause and try to imagine the individuals beneath the surface of the numbers, you know, that are being affected of this. Think of individual stories, and that will help you, I think, try to connect to the reality of what's going on.
Paul, thanks a lot for joining us today.
You're very welcome, Rob.
That's Paul Slovic, professor of psychology at the University of Oregon. He's with us today to talk about whether powerful images can really push us to take action and how to counteract our tendency, maybe natural tendency, to feel like our own actions don't matter or to turn off the more data we get about bad things happening in the world. Still time for you to share your thoughts, maybe a picture that struck you strongly in the past decades. You can do that at the Ideas Network Facebook page.